Welcome to another new episode of the Three Bid League podcast. We're heading towards the close of the regular season, and we got a very special guest joining us here. As always, I am Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. And today we're joined by Richmond senior point guard, Jacob Gilliard. Thanks for joining us, Jacob.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, so you have accomplished plenty these last few years. Took over the NCAA all-time steals record earlier this year. One that kind of snuck up on me, and I feel like I've been keeping track of the records, you became the A-10 assist leader earlier this week. So just some incredible accomplishments. But from a team perspective now, you're heading into your last round of March, one more conference tournament run with all your guys. So what are you looking forward to most in these final weeks of the season, getting to really your first real A-10 tournament with a full house in years?
Yeah, no, we're excited. I think the coolest part, but also the most difficult part is that we have three tough games coming up. It doesn't get any easier for us. And I think at the end of the day, you want to be, playing your best basketball right before the conference tournament. So we're going to get tested here. We're excited. I think we have a chance to compete, win some games here. And then, hopefully that leads us to in the right direction for the tournament.
Yeah, definitely a really tough finish to the season for you guys against some quality opponents in the A-10, but how does that work, once you move on to the regular season and we're quickly approaching the A-10 tournament, how does preparing for those games change? Because obviously it's survive in advance, and if you win, you have a really quick turnaround for the next opponent. So just what's the preparation like, and how's that different?
It's tough. It's really tough. I mean, I think that's the best way to describe it. I think we're pretty confident in our offense. I think anytime somebody doesn't get a lot of time to scout us, I think we have a good shot. But obviously, we're kind of familiar with all the teams. Obviously, you've got I think we'll play Bonnies twice, we'll play St. Louis twice, play BCU twice. So the top four or close to the top four teams we've seen and we're pretty familiar with. So at the end of the day, yeah, like you said, it's kind of survive in advance, but, you got to be playing your best basketball. Anybody can beat anybody on any given night.
So I want to ask about your mentality with some of these games so far this season. To us watching you the last few years, you've been more of kind of the steady hand point guard, the guy who's more of a distributor, you score when need be. But this year, Richmond's offense has been a little bit more up and down, and the big difference is you guys are shooting a significantly higher rate of three-pointers than you have the last few years. And that is obviously fueled by a lot of attempts by both you and Tyler Burton. And one of the things we've seen come out of that is that now you're having games where you do kind of take the shooting into your own hands. 15 shot attempts against Fordham, 16 against VCU. You've had a few with 14. So when you're out there, do you kind of know ahead of time, like, hey, this is a game where maybe I'm going to need to shoot the ball a little bit more, focus more on that than distributing? Or is it just a feel thing as you start to get into the flow of the game?
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely just a feel thing. I think most point guards kind of come in and try to feel the game out. You kind of just want to do what's asked of you or what's required or what you need to do in order to help your team get a win. Obviously, this year, coming into the year, I knew, without Blake, we'd need a little bit of help scoring. So I figured I'd have to take some tougher shots a little bit more. Attempts, obviously. But, Tyler's been playing well. I think he's been taking a lot of pressure off of Grant, myself, as well as the rest of the guys. But, coming to the end of the season, I expected to have to attempt more shots, but I didn't expect us to shoot as poorly as we did in conference play. But I think we're a good shooting team, and hopefully that can show up in these, next couple games.
Yeah, and I think the point guard on the team, clearly you are a distributor in a lot of these games, but something I think we have to ask, what's it like having a 6'10 point guard on the court with you? Because just watching you and Grant run that backdoor cut over and over, I mean, it's almost like your roles can be interchangeable in that way. Just both you guys can score off of those.
Yeah, no, it's great playing with Grant. Obviously he's developed as a great passer. He didn't come in into the league that way, but I've put himself into a really good passer, but, I think it's obviously valuable when you have guys on the floor that can to make plays for others. And I think he's, you know, not only one of the best bigs, but he's one of the best players in the conference that's doing that. So, you know, it's always good to play next to him.
And you guys have a very rare chemistry for college basketball these days. Everyone talks about one and done and the transfer portal just shooting people all over the place. But you've now been at Richmond for 5 years. Grant Gold's been there for six, although I think most people would joke it's probably been somewhat closer to 20. Nathan Kao's now three. Tyler Burton's been there 3 years. Andre Gustafson, same thing. So, and Nick Sherrod's been there now 5 years as well. Kind of forget about him since he missed last season. But how long does it take take to develop chemistry with guys like that? Like, when you started playing with Grant Golden, how long do you feel like it took till you two were really clicking?
You know, I felt like we kind of clicked right away. You know, I think all point guards are kind of pretty close-knit with their big men, kind of just getting a feel for them and how they play. You know, I think the better passer that Grant became, I think it probably made it a little more difficult to kind of get a feel for him. But obviously it helped our team overall. But, you know, I think within our offense, it's kind of natural just kind of have a chemistry with guys. You know, you play with a shooter like Nick Sherrod, you kind of know, you know, you just got to really get him the ball in open spots. At the end of the day, that's kind of what it comes down to. Nate was a good cutter right when he came in. So for me, it was kind of just easy. You know, I felt like we kind of had a good amount of people that kind of mixed well together. And obviously with our offense, you know, you kind of just see where guys want the ball and you kind of figure out where your spots are.
And do you feel like that connection between you guys is maybe your best weapon when you get to the A-10 tournament, or is it something else?
I would say the chemistry probably is our biggest weapon. You know, we've been battle tested. You know, I would, that's kind of cliche, but you know, we've been in situations where we've been down big at halftime or came out to a bad start, you know, so it's not just our experience, but we are pretty, you know, we have a pretty good chemistry. So I think those two will definitely help us out down the road.
So I want to transition over a little bit to outside of the Richmond program. And, you know, you're part of a really great class of A-10 guards. I feel like it's you, Jalen Crutcher, Kellen Grady, Bones Highland, Kyle Lofton, all kind of the same generation. And at the end of the season, all you guys will have moved on from college basketball. So there's a really nice crop of freshman and sophomore guards coming up in this conference. Is there one guy that you've played against this year that really just impressed you, either seeing them in game or just seeing them on film, that you think could be a really good player moving forward?
You know, I'd say we play Yuri tomorrow. Yuri's been great since he was a freshman. Just, you know, obviously he's one of the best passers. I think, yeah, earlier this week was the first time playing against Bishop. You know, he impressed me. Kind of has like a Blake Francis feel to him. Always kind of attacking, always aggressive. He's pretty good. I'm excited to play Malachi. Oh, I'm Ace right up the street. Ace, man, I apologize for being so late to him. No, he's, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, he was winning games last year. You know, as a point guard, that's your job. He's been, you know, he's been a winner in his first 2 years. So he's definitely impressed me for sure.
Yeah, and over the years, too.
Fans would have revolted if you didn't say that.
if I wouldn't have said his name, yeah. No, he's been a tough cover. Good on both sides of the ball and definitely leads our team.
Yeah, and like Tyler said, while you've been in the A-10, there have been so many great point guards. But who would you say, like, is there anyone that sticks out as, like, someone that was just really fun to play defense against, someone that really gave you guys a challenge that you really had to work hard for steals?
Yeah, I'm so old. My freshman year, I played against Jalen Adams. So, like, you know, I would say he's probably the best guard that we had to play. And then, you know, Bonnie's Mobley lit us up in the tournament. I think he set like a A-10 record against us. I think he had like 8 or 9 threes. So that backcourt was tough, but I would definitely say Jalen was probably the best guard that I've had to play against.
Is there, and you can name by name if you want to. If you don't want to give bulletin board material, that's fine. Maybe it's a guy who's left the conference. But are there any guys that you know, like, oh, I'm going to play blank this point guard, I'm just going to dominate him. Like, I'm so excited to just kick this guy's butt up and down the court.
No, I would say so. Like, no, I'm not gonna name any names. I won't even name teams, but there are certain guys. I think within our, like a guard dominant offense, to where I'm getting the ball screen every time down the court, and you know, I kind of just get to manipulate the offense kind of however I want to. But I think within our offense, there's certain teams that you kind of know how their style of defense and who they have out there. You definitely can pick your spots to take advantage of, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes all people need to do is check the game log. You've had a few performances where you go 6-7 steals, and that's about all that people need to see from a domination standpoint.
For sure.
So, like I said, you can go 6 or 7 sometimes. Sometimes it's just 2 or 3, but over your career, you're now at 442 steals. That is good for – sorry, I lost track of the math here. That is good for 57 more than the previous record holder, John Linehan of Providence. And personally, I feel like this record is going to be unbreakable for at least a few decades. So that means that anytime you're at a Richmond game and they show you on TV – the next time that a young stud guard is playing in a big TV game, they're going to go to the Jacob Gilliard highlight and promote you as the all-time steals leader. So do you have either like a favorite steal or a best steal moment, whether it was huge in a game or just one that was really impressive, that you hope they show that highlight when they start talking about you?
Yeah, no, they've asked me this before. My freshman year, I want to say we were losing to BCU as a – it was a rival game, and I want to say we were down like 8 with like 3 minutes left. Something that happened. We cut the lead to 4, I believe. Or we cut the lead to 2. Ended up pressing with like 50 seconds left. I got a steal and laid it up around an out-of-bounds play. That was my freshman year. That was a pretty big one. Ended up winning the game. This year, after I broke the record, we had like a little a ceremony before the game. We were playing Toledo, down 17 and a half. Ended up coming back. Up 2, I believe, and Ryan Rollins, I believe, went up for a pull-up on me, and I stole it. It was a pretty big one for me. And it was kind of just like the night. It kind of just felt like poetic almost, you know, to have the ceremony and then get to the game. You know, ceiling steal was pretty, you know, it just kind of felt right. So I'd probably say that one.
And if you had to pick, would you rather hold on to the A-10 steals or A-10 assists record longer?
You know, I'd say assist probably, just because, you know, I feel like the steals record, you know, I would have got even if I wouldn't have came back for my 5th year and COVID never happened. If I would have got the 10 games I missed my junior, or 10 games I missed my senior year and the couple games I missed my junior year, you know, I think I would have got the NCAA steals record kind of no matter what. So the 8-10 record's kind of cooler to me, just because it is the fact that I came back for my 5th year. So I'd probably say that one.
Yeah. And I love that you said that, cause that's the argument that I've made this season, that if you do the math and you had played a full 4 years, you would have gotten the steals record by, I think you would have had a game to spare if you just assume kind of a normal amount of games missed. So you would have gotten there anyway. The assists record becomes very interesting, because if Yuri Collins comes back for a 5th year at St. Louis, he could very well have a chance to challenge that. So it could be something to watch down the road.
He might even have a challenge, or he might challenge it even next year. You know, I think he's leading the country in assists this year. If he does it next year, I don't know where that puts him, but he might have a chance in 4 years. He's a really good passer.
Yeah, he's already broken the St. Louis record, not even 3 full years. So I think that's all you really need to know. So obviously, you're focused on the rest of your season, probably not thinking much about your professional career, but you're a good enough player that we know you're going to have a multitude of professional offers a few months from now. So if you do decide to leave the U.S. and go play overseas at some point, is there a country that you've ever thought to yourself, like, wow, this would just be an awesome place to live and play ball for a few years?
No, man, I've never, like, outside of, you know, the Cayman Islands and I think the Bahamas, I've never really been out of the country. That's just for tournaments. So I've never really gone and experienced to really anything like it. You know, I don't have a place in mind or anywhere that I've ever thought of. I actually hate flying, which is makes everything a little tougher for me, for sure. But, you know, we'll see when that time comes.
Yeah, it's a potentially exciting chance for you to get somewhere new then. And, you know, you got to love the A-10 tournament location this year, because I assume that you guys would not fly from Richmond to D.C.
Yeah, no. So I believe we'll drive. I think this is where it was my freshman year. I could be wrong. But, you know, I'm excited to be in D.C., not far from Richmond. Should get a good amount of fans out there. So should be good for us for sure.
All right, so one last serious question we got for you. So I assume your number one goal is to make the NCAA tournament here. You guys haven't done it yet. I personally believe that you would have in 2020 had the tournament occurred. But do you have anything else in mind that you'd really like to accomplish on top of that from here on out, whether it's a team goal or an individual goal?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously that's the biggest one. I think that's kind of where everybody's mind is. Everybody's kind of focused on that. For me, you know, I think for Richmond personally, you know, I think everywhere you go, you want to leave it better than you found it. So for me, you know, I'd say for these last, you know, three regular season games and however many we get in the tournament, to just try and be better on the glass. You know, I think that's kind of been Richmond's biggest, you know, Achilles heel. Got to be good on the glass, got to be good on the defensive end. So for us to, you know, finish the season out on that, having a positive note on those two ends, those two goals, we'll set the program in a right direction for the next years coming.
Well, that would certainly be a good way to leave the Spiders in good hands. You know, going to be losing you, Grant Golden, Nathan Kao, Nick Sherrod, but still potentially very intriguing team next year. Burton, Gustafson, Isaiah Wilson, a few other guys. I think Matt Gray still has eligibility. A whole bunch of guys could still be back next year.
For sure. I'm excited for him.
All right. So moving on, you know, clearly you've had an illustrious career, a lot of accomplishments, but we wanted to throw in a few fun questions at the end. So first one, I'm just curious, are you aware, like off the top of your head, you know what your career high is in a game for points?
31.
Okay, yeah, that was quick. Who was it against?
Sophomore year, I scored 31 against IUPUI, and then this year I scored 31 against Fordham. Tied it this year.
All right, that's exactly the answer I'm looking for. If I ever scored 31 points in a game, I would definitely want to know it too. So that is a good one.
That was IUPUI with scholarship players, by the way. So yeah, I even like doing it this year.
Yeah, that's true. A better IUPUI team for sure.
Yeah, that one. That one means a lot more. That's a good point, Tyler.
So, I think this is the most important question of this whole thing here. Who is a better passer, you or Grant Golden?
Oh, it's me. Yeah, that's my roommate. He's probably trying to listen to this. It's me for sure. I tell him, I'd probably say it like once a week. Like I joke about it. I'm like, yo, I'll tell everybody, like, Matt Grace is the second best passer on the team. I'll just be like, yo, I'm the first best passer, and Matt Grace is the second best passer.
You're just telling him to his face that he's not even the best passing center on your
team. Yeah, for sure. You got to let him know. Just put him in his place one time.
You can include some of the guards there, too. So I want to close it out with this. So I believe you're listed at 5'8". Correct me if I'm wrong there, but – you know, most people in basketball, it's always been a game of height. They think that that's a detriment. Clearly, you have proven that it's not. So what do you see is the biggest advantage of being an undersized player?
You know, I could be, like, funny about it and say, like, guys don't see me for, like, why I get all my steals. But, you know, I think naturally, like, when you're shorter or, you know, you're kind of at a what they call a disadvantage in anything in life, I think it kind of gives you a chip on your shoulder. So I'd imagine most guards, you know, you see CP3, a lot of people don't like him. I always looked up to Tyler Ulis, obviously Allen Iverson. Like, these guys just naturally had a chip on their shoulder. So, you know, I think that's probably the biggest advantage that you get from what people would consider your disadvantage.
That's a great answer. And very interesting. I was wondering if you were going to say the sneaking up on people to help you get the steals.
It's helped me a couple of times for sure.
Yeah, it certainly hasn't hurt. But Jacob Gilliard, thank you so much for joining us. And good luck to the Spiders the rest of the season.
No, I appreciate you guys having me, man.
Join the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network on Saturday, April 30th for Purple Stride, the ultimate event to end pancreatic cancer. This event is being held in cities across the country, including Boston, Charlotte, Cincinnati, Columbus, New York City, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Richmond, St. Louis, Washington, D.C., Buffalo, and Warwick, Rhode Island. Learn more and register for free today at purplestride.org/whatever city you are looking for. All right, now we are going to dive into one of our favorite segments on this pod. This will now be year four of drafting our all fun teams. Just a reminder of the rules for anyone who has not heard this before. We will just take turns here, picking five guys that we feel like have been an absolute delight to watch this year. The only rules: cannot have two guys from the same team on your team. And the lineups have to make somewhat sense positionally. We've had some great years the past few with just a bunch of incredible centers, but having four centers and one guard doesn't make any sense on a basketball court. So we're going to adhere to that. And at the end, I think we'll probably pick a fun bench guy to throw on as our sixth man. So Matt, I think you have the first pick here. If you want to kick us off.
Yeah, I can kick it off, but if we had Coach David Cox on here, you don't think he'd try to put four centers on his all fun team?
Malik Martin's not really a center.
No, but I think he will. Oh, Antoine Walker's basically a big man. He's a four. Anyway, I can kick us off. I think it's tough. The first pick's a lot of pressure. I always try to, you know, not necessarily. We don't always talk about the best players in the conference. Usually they're good, but this isn't like a player of the year race or anything. Just someone that I've really enjoyed watching. And, you know, for the all fun team, it's all about intangibles. And one of those is guys that just enjoy being on the court. And for me, that's got to be Joe Bamisil for GW. I think he became a lock for the all fun team in his second game with GW when he was talking back to the Maryland student section, firing up the crowd, throwing down windmill dunks. And he's also just a great player too, averaging 15-5 this year. But just his enthusiasm on the court, you know, and like the fans too. I mean, it wasn't malicious. Like, they were all having fun, and he just clearly like competitive and wants to win, but he also, I don't know, seems like he didn't take it too seriously when the fans were giving it to him. So he's a pretty easy first pick for me.
He is an electric player. And he also has one of the interesting traits of an all-fun team guy, which is if it goes bad for him, it can go really, really bad. And mm-hmm. so you can see when he's forcing up shots on a day where things aren't going right, and this happened a lot more in the non-conference than in conference play. These days are very far and few between at this point. But he just starts chucking, just like his teammate James Bishop, and sometimes that can become entertaining in his own right. But he's a freaky athlete. He is a ferocious dunker, like you said, and his athleticism makes him a pretty fun defender too. Doesn't put up great stats on that end, but I think especially as he continues to develop as a player, he's going to start to become a steals master too, just jumping into passing lanes. He's shown that to us a little bit so far, but just not a ton yet.
Yeah, he brings the mayhem to GW. He's got to be a big reason why they've been so much better this year.
Yeah, so I am torn here as to who to make my captain. This is a very important honor. And God, I don't want to do it because I don't want to seem like I'm just trying to be biased here. But he just continues to be the captain of steel. And for me, I think it's Jacob Gilliard this year. He's been on our teams in the past. I don't believe he's ever been a captain, but now he's scoring more. He's shooting more threes. And some of that heat check ability is what kind of elevates him up this season. But as always, it just comes down to the masterful steals. He is the greatest pickpocketer that we have seen in our lifetimes in the A-10. A guy who can just take the ball off of anyone. And as someone who loves defense, which is going to be reflected with, as long as you don't steal them, two more guys on this team for me, I got to take them. it's still just so fun to just watch him take the ball off of other people. And by the way, once he's gone next year, I think Ace Baldwin's taking that spot on my team because he's starting to show that too. And we give him a few more months to keep getting better at it. He's nearly Gilliard level. And that is something that is incredibly crazy to say.
Yeah. I think, not to be a homer, I think Malachi is getting up there too over at Dayton. But yeah, I mean, Jacob Gilliard, he's been a staple of the Three Bit League podcast. He's always been one of the best players in the league since we've been doing this. And that's got to be one of the best parts of everyone getting an extra year of eligibility is that we got to watch him play another season. So cool to watch him set the record this season for steals. And I mean, not just his defense too. Like, he's really fun to watch on offense too. He makes a lot of great passes. Watching him run the backdoor cuts with Grant Golden and everyone else on Richmond is really impressive. And then he can also just bomb threes. So definitely a great and worthy pick as a captain. I think for my second, I'm going with another newcomer to the A-10. And like I said, like, intangibles matter.
Oh my God, you're going to
for the all fun team. Wait, what's that?
You're going to do it. I know it.
Well, my guy has two intangibles. One, he has accessories. He wears the headband, which counts for a lot, but also the nickname. And so I'm going with Ticket Gaines.
Yeah.
At George Mason. I think I might have, did I steal the pick there?
I couldn't make him my captain because he doesn't score enough, but he was going to be number two.
Well, he doesn't need to score a lot because I would say he's the best glue guy in the entire conference. I mean, he gets a ton of rebounds, over 8 a game. He blocks shots. He's quick. He plays really good defense. And I don't know. He's not that leading scorer type guy for George Mason, but he doesn't really need to be since they have Josh Oduro. And it is kind of a Mason team that isn't always great on defense. So having a guy like that, I think he's as important as anybody. And also just a super athlete. It's easy to see how he got recruited at a school like Tennessee. And I don't know what happened over there, but it seems like he just kind of got passed over for playing time. But in the A-10, he's really found a level where he can thrive. And I mean, between him and Bamisil, like, those two guys transferring into the league have just been so entertaining, and they're like reasons to turn on a George Mason game for me to watch him play.
He's just so bouncy. That's the biggest thing with Gaines. And I've loved watching him since literally the first time that I saw him play for George Mason. It's kind of the same things that made us love watching Jalen Adway last year and has always made him so fun. Just the crazy rebounding that it really blows my mind that there's a mid-major conference that has two guys that are capable of just getting up like that. And, you know, Gaines is a good passer. He's a decent shooter. I'm interested to see what he does next year once Deshaun Schwartz and Devon Cooper are gone, because he's going to have to put the ball in the bucket more. And I think he's a guy who could grow from role player to superstar, but we'll see. For now, he's just a really great fourth guy. So I would have taken Gaines, but you did make this at least easier, because then my next guy would have been one of his teammates, and obviously can't take two George Mason guys. So now I guess I will take Josh Oduro, who is kind of what the evolutionary center is supposed to be. We went from 70 years of basketball just being dominated by back-to-the-basket behemoths, got the ball in the post, tried to fight their way in, and really couldn't do much else. Then we had the quick little overcorrection of about 5 years, where everyone just wanted their center to either be a monster shot blocker or be able to shoot. And now Josh Oduro kind of represents that middle ground that we've found, where he has almost like a collegiate Joel Embiid type skill set. He's still a great, great post-up player. Looks like somebody who was trained out in the 1960s down there. But he gets the ball up at the top of the key. He's an okay shooter. You got to put a guy on him most of the time. And when you don't, he'll hit the three. When you do, He'll do that little swing move, dribble right past you, and create chaos at the rim. Doesn't do a ton defensively. I'm willing to make an exception for a lack of flair on that end, because he's just the most exciting all-around scorer in this conference right now.
We talked about this preseason, I believe, and it definitely came to fruition as something that we hoped for, but Kim English really got the best out of Oduro. I think if you look at his career, he started kind of slow as a freshman, made a big jump sophomore year, but, you know, playing under a new coach, it just seems like English has a perfect system to get the most out of Oduro, where now he's a player of the year candidate, one of the leading scorers in the conference. And like you said, his ability to shoot the three, dribble around guys, just a really good all-around offensive player, really good passer too. So I think, like, for me, just watching his growth since his freshman year, where, like, I think I remember that would have been, you know, he was guarding guys like Obi and Oshun as a freshman, and he just couldn't physically match up. And now he can, like, play with any center in the conference. So I think that's a great pick for the all-fun team. I guess moving on to mine, you know, I do need some elite talent here. A first-team all-conference guy, maybe. And he's definitely one of the most fun. I'll go with Yuri Collins for my point guard. It's pretty hard to say that the nation's assist leader wouldn't be fun to watch. But I think what's also been super impressive is that Yuri has substantially increased his ability to score, both on the mid-range pull-up game and also just driving to the hoop. A much better three-point shooter now. And all of a sudden, he went from, I think, as a freshman and sophomore, someone where he still had to worry about him dropping dimes and making great passes, but you didn't really have to respect him as someone that could score a lot of points. And now you do. And I would say there are certain times this season where watching a St. Louis game, he is the scariest player in the conference with the ball in his hands. And I definitely did not feel that way about him earlier in his career when he wasn't that scoring threat. But right now, whenever he has the ball, which is an awful lot at St. Louis, but I feel like you just watch a little bit closer because you just never know what's going to happen next.
He was certainly under consideration for me. It's still just the passing. He does such a great job of it. I've said this since his freshman year, and but he reminds me of kind of a young Rajon Rondo. Fantastic defender. He's undersized against basically everyone except other point guards, but it doesn't matter because he's so strong. You can't move him. He's tough as nails. And the grittiness combined with the passingness is so – I think I just said passingness. I'm not going to edit that out. passingness, new word. It's really fun for anyone who enjoys the finer points of basketball. And now, like you said, the scoring kind of helps with anyone who enjoys the box score points of basketball. And he is now transitioning from Celtics winning the title Rajon Rondo to the big three starting to get a little old, need to pick up some more of the slack Rajon Rondo. I'm still rolling with that comparison.
That's good.
And, all right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to move on to the next pick unless you had another Yuri Collins comment.
No, I was just going to add, like, I didn't really even mention his defense, but, I mean, that's really good too. And like you said, maybe one of the grittiest players in the A-10, just always going after it. And, you know, the fact that he does that on both ends is just so impressive.
All right, so I got a point guard of my own here. I'm going to take Foster Lawyer of Davidson. And this is a tough one because Luka Brajkovic and Hyungjoon Lee are also very worthy of spots on this team. But I got to go with the A-10's version of the point god. Foster Lawyer, you know, sometimes it doesn't seem like he's doing too much. He'll get the ball. He'll make the easy pass. He'll kind of dribble around to see what's there. He's quick to always abort the mission and just pull things back to the top. But you can almost see him thinking as he goes through the game. Every half of a step that Foster Lawyer takes, is meant to be meaningful. He's trying to create space. He's trying to make it so that the pass to the open man isn't just so that they might have a good shot. It's to guarantee that they have a good shot. And, you know, he's one of the smartest, most cerebral players that we've gotten to see in this conference the past few years. It's a delight. And one thing that I've raved about probably 7-8 times on this pod already this year is that he knows the right moment to step up. His scoring average is lower than it could be because he's trying to just get other people involved. But you see it when there's a big run, when Davidson needs to stop it, when they need a big shot at the end of the game, there's Foster Lawyer getting to the foul line for that little pull-up.
Yeah, I think anyone going into the season that thought Davidson wasn't going to have a great point guard was just kidding themselves, because that's the true McKillop special. He just finds a way to have a great backcourt, and Foster Lawyer was the perfect fit for Davidson. He has, I think we'd probably both agree that Luka Brajkovic is the favorite if there's going to be a Davidson player to win conference player of the year, but Davidson isn't where they're at without Foster Lawyer running that team. And it's just worked out so well for him as a transfer coming from Michigan State, where he didn't have the same opportunity. And you're right. He could, I mean, there's a lot of schools I think where he could average 20 points a game, but at Davidson, it's just so perfect with how efficient they are that he knows the right time to force shots when Davidson needs him to. And also a really good passer that sets his teammates up. All right. Is that three picks each? I'm trying to figure out how I can make this roster work out. I still need a big man on my team, and there's a lot of choices, a lot of fun players here, but I think I'm going to go with Chuba Ohams from Fordham, just because I was so happy that he came back for his extra year. Last year, he didn't even play until, I think he played one game in the conference tournament, but he was injured. And just his story of coming back after dealing with so many injuries, he's the leading rebounder in the A-10 by a big margin. And he just has some of the most entertaining box scores in the league, where like he's probably the only threat to pick up 20 rebounds. I think he's done that a couple times. Ton of offensive rebounds too in general. But he's just a guy that, like, I feel like whenever I watch Fordham, he's one of the best at fighting for loose balls and keeping possessions alive. And just a guy, I mean, Fordham in general has been a more fun team to watch with Kyle Neptune and some of their newcomers. But throughout the duration of the Three Big League podcast over the years, Chuba Ohams has been the guy that's made Fordham worth watching. And I don't think I've ever picked him for this before, but I guess this is my nod, as his in his senior year, I had to pick him at some point. He's just been very fun the last couple years.
I just love the rebounding. He's still top five in the nation in that stat. And it's just fun to see a guy who's still so dedicated to a phase of the game that people going through high school certainly do not think is sexy. So that is my Chuba Ohams thoughts.
Yep.
All right. So you have Gaines, Ohams, Collins, and your first
Bamisil.
And Bamisil. I was blanking on your first overall pick. I have Oduro, Gilliard, and Lawyer. I had a strategy going here. I was kind of piecing things out so that I could properly set up my sixth man, but I just can't believe that you just haven't taken him yet. Daron Holmes is still here.
I know. I thought about it. I was stuck between him and Chuba Ohams. They're both, there's going to be more opportunities to pick Holmes in the future.
So apologies to Kobe Brea, who is going to be my sixth man in this setup, and Oshun Oshunahi, who normally gets the shot blocker spot. But I got to take Holmes here. He basically dunks like freshman Obi Toppin. He's nowhere near sophomore year windmill and Obi Toppin yet.
But
right now, when he goes to the rim, it is ferocious. It is powerful. He does not miss. He can catch lobs. He lives in that little dunker spot, although he can kind of get out, do a little bit at the top of the key. His jump shot will come soon, someday. But right now, he is just vicious at the rim. And if you're an opposing defense, you see him coming at you in midair, you know it's going to be painful. Unless apparently it's Martin Lindsen guarding him, who really just did a number on him the second time Dayton played St. Louis. But he's the A-10's thrilling midair man right now. And on the other end, he's a crazy shot blocker. Right up there with Ashuna Shunahi and Hassan Ward right now, and Mikhail Mitchell, among the most entertaining in the A-10. The two best things that he does are two of the funnest things to watch. So what's not to like?
The last thing I want to do on here is make Obi Toppin comparisons, but I'm not saying he's not that good. Like, before, you know, people get mad and turn it off.
People forget how well-rounded Obi was.
Yeah.
And that's what made him special. But as a dunker, where Obi was his freshman year, Daron Holmes is at the same point right now.
Well, and what gets me with Holmes that I think is very similar, like especially to Obi's first year, for a big man, he runs the floor so well. I mean, he's 6'10", but he's a gazelle.
He's elegant.
Like, he's one of the fastest guys on the court. And watching him in transition, getting open for dunks, it's amazing. And I know a lot of his dunks have come just on, like, alley-oops or in the half-court offense. But he's just so quick on both ends of the court. And that's what really impresses me, I think, the most out of – among a lot of other things. All right. Last pick. I could still take a Dayton player. I haven't done that yet. And I think I am. I need another guard. And you know what? It might not be who you expect. I'm going to take Kobe Elvis because he, at the beginning of the year,
I considered him as well if you were going to take Holmes.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that Kobe Elvis at the beginning of the season went from one of the most passive offensive players I've ever seen to all of a sudden, like, at times he's just been a gunner, but it works. Like, he can confidently catch and shoot threes. He's got to have one of the best, like, mid-range games in the conference, which I know people don't like that all the time now, but he makes it work. And even shots that aren't open, I feel like he's got to have the best shooting percentage, at least on Dayton, at the end of the shot clock where he just forces something up fading away. Seems like he's more capable than anyone of making those acrobatic shots and get Dayton buckets when they really need it. So I think he's going to be my final pick. Also, he's improved a lot on defense too. He's part of what makes Dayton's pressure defense and their press really good too. So it's tough. I could have gone with Malachi Smith there, but I needed another scorer on this roster.
He's been really fun. And I think the underrated part in Elvis's fun factor is that he makes so many tough no-no-no-yes shots that you kind of get the little pit in your stomach that he's just forced up something terrible and then it swishes through and you realize, oh, he's just on fire today. And you can just kind of ride that heat the whole rest of the game.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of those days in the conference, too. I think he might still be above 50% from three in conference play, which is just ridiculous, especially at the beginning of the year where no one could shoot. Okay, so he's 48%, so third place in the conference. But it's just wild. So many of his shots look like they have no business going in, but he finds a way.
All right, so I got two big men and two guards. I need some wing shooting here. And since I already took a lawyer, that means I can't take Hyungjoon Lee. So then that narrows it down to an easy one, and it's Gibson Jimerson. And apologies to Fred Thatch, but I don't need another bruiser on this team. He's essentially replaced Javonte Perkins' scoring this year. He's developed a Javonte Perkins-esque offensive game. Now, he doesn't do what Perkins did on the boards, but he can get anywhere on the floor now. He's still a sensational three-point shooter. He loves his mid-range pull-up. And he's getting to the rim and, more importantly, getting to the foul line at a rate that I just never possibly thought he would get to. He's so tough going to the hoop. He is not afraid of getting fouled, although he probably shouldn't be, given that he is in the running to potentially break the St. Louis school record for free throw percentage in a season. But he is just a hard-nosed, all-over-the-floor scorer. And that's what my team's lacking right now, is a guy who can just get buckets with jumpers all over. Pair him with Oduro in the middle, Gilliard and Lawyer distributing. God, that's a delightful offense. I feel like I hit on five different offensive skill sets too, so.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, Gibson Jimerson, though, he's got to be one of the best just offensive players we've seen in the A-10. And I think the fact that this year he has just gotten such a well-rounded game has made him more fun to watch, where he used to just be a catch-and-shoot guy, and now, he can drive to the rim, just score in a lot of different ways. Although one thing, too, I think that makes him unique and I think increases the fun factor, he might have one of the quickest releases I've ever seen. And, like, if you pair him with fellow all-fun team member Yuri Collins, like, watching Yuri push the ball to Jimerson in transition for just a lightning quick three, that's one of the prettiest sequences you can watch in the A-10 right now.
Yeah, St. Louis's whole offense is the funnest that it's been in a long, long, long time, so.
Yeah, we've come a long way since the 2019 season, the beginnings of the three-bid league. That was not a fun team to watch. Even though they won the tournament, but still wasn't pretty.
All right, so you got a starting five, Yuri Collins, Joe Bamisil, Kobe Elvis in the backcourt, plus, God, I'm blanking.
Ticket Gaines and Chubo Hams.
Yep, you're going a little bit of small ball here.
It's small ball.
Close it out with your sixth man.
I feel bad. I mean, I feel like I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to take the same guy. So are you sure you want me to have the first pick since I've been going first on these?
Fine, I'll take it because I'm about to cheat.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty sure that I can't consider Hassan Ward or TJ Weeks for this.
That's pushing it.
And the Duquesne as a team just frustrates me too much, even though some of their guys can be fun when they come off the bench and incredibly angering when they start. So I'm cheating. I'm taking Kobe Brea.
Oh, that's fine.
Because I need some bench offense here. He's just the ultimate heat check master at this point in the A-10. You check his box scores, his game logs. There are some nights where it feels like he is not even on the court. And then there are other nights where you really wonder how Dayton can possibly survive without him. He's a dead-eye shooter. He's got a beautiful little floater to his game. And there's just kind of this manic mayhem to his stats this year. At one point in the middle of conference play, he scored single-digit points 8 games straight, but then came back and went 4-for-8 from three against Rhode Island the next game. He had a 20-point game in the blowout of St. Bonaventure. It kind of amazes me that his scoring is still only at 7 a night, but he's starting to get more consistent as the year goes on. You know he's good for anywhere from 2 to 6 baskets every game. And especially as a Dayton fan, like I said with Kobe Elvis, sometimes you can ride the fire. With Kobe Brea, that flame is just scalding hot, because when he starts making shots, he will start getting more confident and forcing crazier shots. And most of the time when he does that, it's actually the right idea.
Yeah, and he's actually 47% from three in the league, so one spot behind his teammate Kobe Elvis. But yeah, I mean, Dayton having that type of a scoring option off the bench is such a luxury that they didn't have at the beginning of the season, when really Kobe Brea, like you said, just not a good start to the year. And he can be one of those guys, I think, that we opened up with, where when it gets bad, it can be really bad and he can just be a non-factor. But more often than not, he has been really good recently down the stretch. So I think that's a good pick, even though you did cheat a little bit, but that's okay. He still is a bench player. He hasn't started a game this year. But okay, the reason I was going to give you the option, I'm taking a player from your true favorite team. And he's the only bench player I know of in the conference that has people making t-shirts for him, and it's Quadri Adams, free Quadri. The man for St. Bonaventure that plays about 4 minutes a game, which leads the team off the bench. But he's really fun to watch. He's aggressive driving to the rim. He's really quick. He provides that much needed burst of energy when everyone inevitably gets tired for St. Bonaventure. And I'm like unironically looking forward to watching him play 39 minutes a game next year, because he has been entertaining. And I think there have been moments this year where you can see why he ended up at Wake Forest. He's got talent. He just doesn't have the same experience as the other Bonnies.
I thought about it. I really like watching Quadri Adams. Because, like, by the way, he's good. I keep saying this. He is actually good. But I think he has to be ineligible between the combination of, A, the level of anger that he causes you when you're watching him play well and you're thinking, how the hell is this guy not playing 15 minutes a night on a team that plays no other perimeter guys off their bench? And also the Rhode Island game where Schmidt just decided he was going six-man rotation and started playing two centers together for the first time all season over playing Quadri Adams. Although, I guess if you're ever going to play two centers, Rhode Island is the team to do it against.
I was thinking the same thing, yeah, but...
Yeah, Quadri Adams didn't get in until the final minute of a game that Bonaventure led by double digits, I think maybe the entire game. They might have been up 10-0, like 4 seconds in, if that's possible, but...
Yeah. That actually reminds me, too, that St. Bonaventure-Rhode Island game. We didn't pick him, but for an all-fun team moment of the year, might be when Oshunayi made his first career three-pointer in garbage time. I don't know if you caught that, but pretty exciting stuff. The Riley Center seemed electric after that went in.
That was the best moment of the year for the Bonaventure fans so far.
Yeah, I think that's right. But all right, that was a good all fun team draft. I'm feeling good about my team, even though my sixth man only plays about 4 minutes a game, but he's well rested for our season.
I'm delighted with mine too. I got Lawyer and Gilliard in the backcourt. I got two shooters with Jimerson and then Kobe Brad coming off the bench. Oduro can anchor the center position on offense, and Deron Holmes can take that responsibility on defense. So I'm delighted as well. And so before we wrap things up, I'm going to spring this on you here. I got a very quick where he at.
Oh, okay.
And that is the former St. Joe's guard, Jared Bynum. And this is in honor of his dagger three at the end of the triple overtime game to finish off Xavier. He moved Providence up to 13-2 in the Big East. They got a chance to steal the Big East regular season title from Villanova. Providence has never won that title in the school's history, and that triple OT win over the Musketeers is absolutely huge to them achieving that goal. But Jared Bynum, as part of that game, scores 27 points. Even though he was coming off the bench, that is nearly his season high. He had 32 earlier in the year against a pitiful Georgetown team. But it's a season high for big games. He's putting up 12 points a game, 4 assists a game. We've seen a lot of the more promising A-10 players who have left the league for Power 6 schools in the last few years have taken a step back. They've kind of disappeared. Not Jared Bynum. He's certainly not the star that he was on a pretty bad St. Joe's team. But he's the sixth man for a squad that's going to be a top 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. So I would say that is a win for Bynum.
Yeah, he's been really good for Providence, especially I feel like recently I've seen his name pop up a lot, and he's been having some big games. So good for him. I mean, that goes way back now, but he was a lot of fun to watch at St. Joe's. And I know he's been a subject of where he had a couple times, but Sincere Carey just dropped a 40-point game for Kent State, and I think he made 11 three-pointers or something like that. Kind of upstaged his teammate that had a triple-double in the same game. So, good to see him also playing.
Did you get an ESPN alert for that?
I don't know if I did, but I retweeted something. I saw it on SportsCenter. I'm like, why is Sincere Carey on ESPN?
I couldn't figure out if it was a college basketball in general alert or if they put that as a Duquesne alert just to troll people. Because I got so excited that the next night I went to Duquesne Davidson hoping to see if he could do it two nights in a row.
I wish. That would have been nice. Duquesne could use that.
And then Duquesne put up that many points in 32 minutes as a team. So,
yeah, it's just not the same this year.
Yeah, Sincere Carey is missed. Take care of him, Kent. At least it's a – and I will say this for the Mac Center. It's a fun place to be for a game. I have had the pleasure of being there before. So he's playing in a good environment, and I know that those Kent fans appreciate him. So.
Yeah, I wonder, we'll have to do this. This has to be an off-season thing. If we put, like, the five best A-10 active transfers in a lineup, like, how many games do they win in the A-10? I wonder if that would be, like, a double bye team or, like, middle of the pack. Because I just feel like right now, like, Jared Bynum, Sincere Carey, like, put Marcus Weathers.
Marcus Weathers is just roasting NCAA tournament teams and doing nothing against everybody else.
Well, you need a guy like that. I feel like you could make a really good A-10 team out of guys that left the conference, but I have to put more thought into it.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain you could, but that does it for another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. We'll be back one more time later this week, and then we got next week our awards pod and an A-10 tournament preview. It is hard to believe, folks, but at the time you're listening to this, it will be at most 8 days away from the start of the A-10 tournament. I'm very excited. Matt's very excited. I'm sure that you all are as well. So thank you for listening to another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. If you enjoy the show, please give us 5 stars and a comment on iTunes. Shoot us any suggestions or any mailbag questions you got on Twitter at the number 3-Bid League pod. Everybody enjoy it. We got 2 more rounds of regular season basketball. It's going to be a doozy. The double bye race is on fire. The conference title race is heating up. We got Dayton and Davidson clashing on Saturday to potentially decide that one seed.